Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rama Kifri, and this is episode number 225. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, and comment. Just helps us spread the word. Also, want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Sorenex, for being a sponsor of this episode. You know, you guys all know how I feel about Sorenex, just a fantastic company that does it the right way, and great people, great organization, and if you're in the market for racks, rigs, the whole deal, just go to the originators and see them personally. This week I'm joined by Scott Shirley. Scott is the executive director of Uplifting Athletes. He's also the CEO of Pledget, and got a chance to first meet him when I was at the University of Tennessee, and just has an incredible story and has done something that we should all aspire to do. But man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I kind of alluded to, you know, the backstory, but, you know, it started with Uplifting Athletes, and it started at Penn State as a wide receiver. And if you could, just for everybody that's not familiar with Uplifting Athletes, can you go back to the beginning and kind of talk about what, you know, what is Uplifting Athletes and what was the genesis of it starting?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thanks for having me. I feel like I'm joining a cast of legends here. You know, so many men that have helped to shape me over the years. I've been able to watch their testimony on your show, and I I'm honored to have a chance to share my story here. So like you said, it goes back to Penn State, fall of 2002. I'm on my way home from practice. I'm a wide receiver in my redshirt junior year. And I get a call from my mom, and she was calling to tell me that my dad was diagnosed with a rare cancer and was only given 6 months to live. And, you know, anybody that knew my dad kind of saw him, you know, as I did. He was a coach for 34 years. He was a winner. He was a fighter. He was a God-fearing man who lived a very healthy lifestyle, and he seems like the guy that beats cancer. I figured that was going to be his legacy. So I didn't panic. I was going to let other people panic. I was just going to kind of keep a level head. Like Joe always said, you know, you're not as good as you think you are when you win. You're not as bad as you think you are when you lose. So right. I kind of live in the middle there. And, you know, I put together a game plan, and we went to see different – all the top doctors in the Mid-Atlantic region. You know, we went up to Sloan Kettering in New York and Fox Chase in Philly, and – you know, finally in the spring of 2003, we're running out of time, and we went to see the top oncologist at Hopkins, and he didn't even bother closing the door of the waiting room. He just stuck his head in and said, the reality is there's nothing we can do. Go home and enjoy the time that you have left. Wow. And that was the first point that I felt like we had really kind of reached the end of the road. And, you know, I'm trying to balance school and football and this family thing that we're dealing with and really trying to save my dad's life. And on my way back from Hopkins, I started to do some research on my phone and called the American Cancer Society. They told us that kidney cancer wasn't one of their priorities. You know, it doesn't typically respond to chemo or radiation because all cancers have different molecular pathologies, different treatment protocols. So I called the Kidney Cancer Association next, and they said that the challenge is really that there's the mortality rate so high, you only had a 10% chance of a 5-year survival. There's not enough people living with the disease that there's a big enough market to make new treatments. You know, and that's why it's classified as rare. So I walked in my apartment that night, my roommate, teammate, Damone Jones, was sitting on the couch, and he asked me about my day. And I said, you know what, man, it sucks. 45,000 Americans a year are diagnosed with this, and they're told that nothing can be done because nobody cares. Damone looked at me and shrugged his shoulders and said, well, then why don't we do something? You know, we're Penn State football players. We have a spotlight. Let's shine it on people who need a voice. So we started talking about it in the locker room, and the team rallied around an idea. We had to hold a summer lifting competition that became known as the Lift for Life. And in 3 short months, you know, we had guys line up at our locker saying, hey, I heard what you're trying to do. How can I help? I want to be involved. And it allowed Damone and I to reach corners of the locker room that we didn't typically engage with at that intimate level. You know, whether it's different positions, different classes. I mean, you know the dynamics of a locker room. You're all friends, but – you know, it created a bond. It galvanized the team in a way unlike anything else that I've experienced in sport. And I've always believed in the power of sport for social good, and it really kind of manifested itself in this way. in summer of 2003. So we held the first Lift for Life event. John Thomas, Coach JT, and Jeremy Scott were our strength coaches at the time. You know, brilliant minds in the business and fully supportive of what we wanted to do. And we raised $13,000 that first year and felt like, you know, it was a nice start. But what was really special about it was the opportunity that we had as players to get that hands-on, real-world experience in effectively running our own business. You know, we were able to take the leadership we learned from football, the, you know, academics that we were learning in the classroom, and apply it to solve a real-world problem in a big way. And so we registered as a student org. We ran again the next year, and we grew from 13,000 to 38,000.
Wow.
So after the second event in 2004, Dave Costlow, our starting center, and I were writing thank you notes to some of the bigger donors late on a Thursday night and said, you know, here we are, a couple college kids sending $50,000 in the mail to these people in Chicago that we've never met. And typical college thought process, we said, we should go out and meet them sometimes. So we looked at our calendars. The only weekend we were both available was that weekend starting that night. So we called JT and said, hey, you know, I haven't missed a workout in 5 years. Would you excuse us? Cause we have to drive to Chicago. You know, we're calling JT at 10 o'clock at night. And he said, yeah,
that probably didn't go over well.
Well, you know, by the time you're in that fifth year, you've earned the trust. And if you have a good reputation, a good record. So he said, yeah, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So, we went out to the airport, rented a car and drove to Chicago because we had learned that it was our biggest patient conference of the year. So we told them we were coming, and they said, you know, we're only a staff of three. We're worried we might not get to spend time with you because we have 500 patients here, and this is our big event. And we said it really didn't matter to us. It was the only opportunity we had, so, you know, we were going to take that chance. And we're about an hour outside of Chicago when we get a call from the Kidney Cancer Association to see if we were still planning to come. We said, yeah, of course. You know, we've been driving all night. You know, we're in Gary, Indiana right now. I said, okay, good. Our keynote speaker just canceled. Do you guys think you could fill in for us? So, of course, we said yes. We pulled over to rest stop and changed our clothes. And we got to the Hilton O'Hare, and they valeted our car and ushered us right up on the stage. And that was the life-changing moment for me. That was the aha moment for me. We drove to Chicago to meet the people we were giving the money to. But before we met anybody, we're standing in front of a room full of people that lived in the same world that my family lived in, where we were told that nothing can be done because nobody cares. And in walked two college football players who drove halfway across the country because, you know what, we gave a damn. And in that moment, we were interrupted three times by standing ovation. We moved their medical advisory board to tears. And I learned that if we accomplish nothing else, we're at least in a position to inspire people with hope by simply taking action, by taking this platform that we have and using it for a greater good. And, you know, Dave and I kind of fantasized the whole trip home about how we could make this a national movement, creating this unique experience for the college football student athlete who, with the year-round commitment to football and school, it's really tough to get this third kind of holistic kind of real life experience outside of it. I mean, you've been in it, I've been in it. We know how that translates. But when you enter the job market, if you're talking to somebody who hasn't been through it, it's hard for them to connect the dots. And when you can bring something, an experience like this forward and say, this is how it translates, you know, it makes a world of difference as you take that first step out of football into the real world.
No, but incredibly inspiring. And I mean, shoot, I'm tearing up just thinking about that, standing ovations, you know, and get me on stage. And more importantly, as a coach, to think about the type of impact that your players can have. And, you know, sometimes we forget that as coaches, you know, we forget that they're people too, and they have their own sets of challenges, and they have their own ambitions and goals. And more importantly, the opportunity they have to make an impact in the world. And that's everything that we're about. That's why we got into coaching. And sometimes in the day to day, you forget that. But
yeah,
so much to unpack there. And I want to dig into all that. Before I want to go into, you know, in the show, one of the questions I always ask is, you know, what's the biggest mistake you've made as a coach and how you learn from it? Running this organization that's raised over $400 million, you know, I'm sure you've made tons of mistakes, especially that young, you know, fifth year wide receiver.
Yeah.
What's one of the biggest mistakes you made running an organization and how you learned from it?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things I've learned is that it takes longer to do less than what you would expect. I mean, Dave and I thought within a year or two, we'd be able to get ESPN on board, have this be a World's Strongest Man competition type event where we have Lift for Life on every campus and, you know, on the same day, game days out there doing remote broadcasts. I mean, we had a big vision for it. And I think having a big vision is good and it's important. But, you know, what I learned right away is that sports are a business and charity is pretty cutthroat. Yeah. And I started to shop around the idea of Lift for Life. And I had ADs at major universities say, I love the idea of this event, but this is, you know, a cause that I want to benefit rather than your cause. And I would say, well, that's great, but that's not what we're about. And they would say, that's great. There's nothing you can do to stop me. Right. You know, so the harsh reality of the business side of sports really presented itself right away. So it made me realize how committed you have to be if you want to stay true to who you are versus allowing somebody to take what you've created and really dilute it and make it something else. You know, the reason we started this was because I was standing in that room full of people that lived in a world where nobody was fighting for them. Right. And we created a team for them to be a part of so that they didn't feel like they were fighting alone. And I couldn't let the business of sport take that away from what we were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, initially it just kind of naturally happened that it ended up being a lift, you know, basically a lift-a-thon, right? You know, and you know, that was the case early on for you at Penn State, but then it's grown to where, you know, now you do just different types of events, but it's always kind of been at its core that Lift for Life, you know, and why strength and conditioning? Why strength and conditioning coaches? What was the appeal there to keep that as part of the organization?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've always really admired and respected about the profession is that you guys are the ones that are with us at 5:30 in the morning. You guys are the first ones there. You're oftentimes the last ones to leave. And you treat everybody with the respect that they earn. It's not about how good you are, how many stars you have. It's about how hard you work. And you know, the idea of fundraising to me is earning people's support. And it really just made sense to me to start in the weight room where, you know, as I said, we're reaching all corners of the locker room. There's no more level playing field than the weight room. If you bust your hump, you're going to earn respect. And if you earn respect, those guys will go to the end of the world for you. And they'll go to bat for you. And they'll go to fight for you. And you know, there's not a group of grown men that I would rather go to battle with than my strength coaches. And that wasn't – it was JT and it was Jeremy, but it was all of our GAs. And it was all of the student assistants and the interns. And, you know – if you have the mentality that leads you to the weight room, you're the type of guy that I want to be working with.
Absolutely. I think it's – you're right in so many ways. I think it's – you know, that's the one thing that as strength coaches that I always pride myself on is that, you know, I purposely – when I went into different situations, I tried not to know who the starter was. I tried not to, you know, to – know what the opinion of the existing staff was on a kid because it was you know a level playing field and it's as long as you put in the work you're gonna have my respect and you're gonna and you know I want to make an impact on every single person's life that I touch on a daily basis and I know somebody feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean the locker room it's not political it's not bureaucratic it's the purest sense of democracy that you can find.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. You talked about in the beginning, you know, the skill set that the athletes gain by having been a part of this, and now essentially there's chapters of uplifting athletes across different campuses, and essentially they pick the rare disease. They create the board and the committee to kind of put it on, organize it and do it. Obviously have the support of the organization, but I mean, there's so much strength in that of rallying, you know, the athletes around a cause, sometimes often personal to that specific institution, but then turn around and the entrepreneurship that it instills in those athletes and a sense of the enhanced communication and all the other additional benefits. talk about maybe some of the stories or experiences that you had where, you know, you've had some athletes that have gone into that situation and just flourished in a big league way.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's honestly my favorite part of it. You know, so we started to grow after that 2004 experience. Kind of one school the next year, we added two more schools the next year. And soon enough, we were at about 30 schools. And the programming, the charitable programming at Uplifting Athletes includes an Uplifting Leaders program, which is really the focus we have on helping these guys mature. And with that, we have a leadership retreat that we do every year. So we bring these like-minded players from across the country. We go from Florida to Massachusetts to Washington to California. I mean, we've got the corners covered. And, you know, it's cool to see what happens when you bring those guys together and you got a Colgate kid leaving wearing a Penn State t-shirt because, you know, he's now a fan for life. And you have Ohio State kids checking in on how Princeton's doing this weekend. You know, it's just so cool to see how similar they are, yet they would likely never meet, and how those friendships last a lifetime, really. And, and you know, it's funny, Becky Mays, who was our chapter manager for a year, we jokingly called her the director of bromance because, you know, a guy gets drafted and he's texting her saying, hey, can you find me a roommate out in San Francisco, you know, because the guys that come through our program know that anybody else that's been through our program is the type of person they want to be with, they want to align with. I mean, we've seen players take this experience to med school, to law school, to Capitol Hill. You know, at one point, 43% of NFL players had come from a school with an Uplifting Athletes chapter, and it's allowed us to kind of continue those relationships in a big way. And in fact, a lot of guys, you know, I say we're trying to train people of social influencers during their formidable years how to make an impact on the communities around them. And, you know, when the guys get to the NFL, they have a bigger stage, arguably, at the NFL. And you know, to backtrack a second, one of the things that I like about keeping our program really focused on college football is that college football as an entity is kind of strange, right? The NCAA governs the rules of amateurism and the rules of play, but you have your conferences, you have the college football playoffs now, you have the BCS during my day. But there's no real sense of ownership for anybody to partner with college football. You know, the NCAA and college basketball exists completely differently than college football does. And really the only common thread across college football that you could use to build a program like this is the student athlete. You know, no matter who's in charge, what's governing, at the end of the day, without the student athlete, you don't have the sport of college football. So that's really why we focus them on the most important advocate for us. You know, we don't sell the program to a coach first. We typically try to get the guys that are involved in the program to reach out to guys they know from high school all-star games, from the recruiting trail, that they think this might be a fit, that because they've had an experience with a rare disease, because they have a desire for something greater, or because they want to make an impact on their communities. But, you know, with that number of guys in the NFL that have come through our life skills program, our Uplifting Leaders program, you know, I have guys who reach out to me every year and say, hey, now that I'm here, I want to help the homeless, or I want to help the hungry, or I want to, you know, whatever the cause might be that they're passionate about. And I was fortunate enough to have people rally around my cause for a long time and make a big, tremendous impact. But in 2014, Devin called me in May of 14 and said, hey, Scott, you know, my baby girl has been diagnosed with this rare neuroblastoma. And fortunately, we had raised a good bit of money for neuroblastoma, and I was familiar with the diagnosis. And he said, you know, the NFL is making me play to keep my health insurance, and I just want to be with my girl. So if I have to play, how can I use the NFL as a platform like we did in college? And I said, you know, Devin, I've had this idea for a long time for what I was calling performance-based fundraising, where you can earn the support. You know, we'll create a website where you can have Bengals fans pledge for every sack the team has, and you can raise money for Leah, raise awareness about the cause, raise money for families that are less fortunate than you, but do it while playing the game that you love. And, you know, really it comes down to you use your celebrity, your position to promote it, and then you go out and you earn it. And so we created the first ever Pledge It campaign in about 2 weeks for Devin, and it launched. And 2 days later, Philip Rivers calls and says, hey, Scott, I saw what you're doing with Devin. Can I use Pledge It for the Ronald McDonald House? So we set one up for him. And Alex Gordon calls and says, hey, you know, we're in the World Series with the Royals, and somebody told me that you can help me raise some money for the Team Jack Foundation, because, you know, Team Jack was a spinoff of Uplifting Athletes at Nebraska after Jack's touchdown and the tremendous impact that that had. So, we quickly realized that there was a desire, there was a market for people to use the power of sport for social good in their own way. So in the early part of 15, I raised some venture capital and built the company Pledge Platform with Pledge It as the app. And now on Pledge It, we have thousands of people right now raising money for causes that range from nature conservancies to hurricane relief to cancer research. We have a high school football team here that's raising money for Project ALS, and every touchdown they score this season's worth over $2,000 for Project ALS because they have hundreds of people that are pledged $5 or $10 a touchdown. So they're able to rally their community, use the platform that they have, be social influencers. And I underestimated how fulfilling it would be for me to create a tool and see how others use it. And I wake up and I check my phone every morning to see what awesome is being done on Pledge It. And, the one story I like to tell is Bismack Biyombo, sixth man for the Raptors at the time. I don't follow the NBA that closely, so I didn't recognize his name, but I saw he was with the Raptors. So check out his campaign. And he had been to the Eastern Congo during the All-Star break and saw that his school had been devastated over there. And he wanted to rebuild it. He wanted to rebuild the school with his rebound. So he created a campaign on Pledge It, completely do it yourself. And in 48 hours, he raised $42,000 and grew his Twitter following by 10%. Supporting the Eastern Congo Initiative is not something that is really personally on my radar. It's kind of outside of the scope of my personal mission that my wife and I have subscribed to. But it's a very worthy, very noble cause, and it's amazing to be able to support that in a passive way by creating a tool that you make available to the world to use.
Yeah, I think, I read a book a while back. It was called The Promise of a Pencil. I don't know if you ever heard that. It was Adam Braun. But, here was a guy that did kind of a semester at sea, and mm-hmm. They took a pencil with him. And when he went to these villages, he essentially would have them write a word. But they were so enamored by the pencil and just the opportunity to learn. And so it's led to this huge movement of building schools that people, a lot of people have got behind. But I mean, your story, his story, so incredibly impressive to me to see action takers take just an idea and go from that to, like I said, over $400 million and however much on Pledge It as well. And,
yeah.
And find the opportunities while you're in it to continue to help in different ways. I think that, it would have been very easy for you, very maybe life fulfilling for you to focus purely on uplifting athletes and focus on kidney cancer and call it a day. But I mean, you continue to find different ways to help others. And I think as humans, as strength coaches, I mean, we have an opportunity to influence the social influencers that you keep talking about. I mean, you've got 105 football players or, 30 baseball players or whatever it may be. You have this opportunity to influence them in a big way. And, if you can do that to affect good in the world, I think it's the number one thing that we should all be striving for. With you, with the organization now, what's the goal? When it's all said and done, what are you going to feel good about?
Yeah, with Uplifting Athletes, we still, from the car ride back from Chicago, I would love to see it on every college campus. And I would love for football to be at its core, college football to be at its core, but have it be a program that is a learning environment. It is a laboratory to develop future leaders across all of sport. But I think that's where Pledge It has made that more realistic, because as software, it scales infinitely. We have a dedicated team here. I like to say a team of an all-star team of nerds and jocks that are building Pledge It and growing it. And we're creating programs like Touchdowns Against Cancer here, where high school football teams are able to launch a campaign through Max Preps in just three clicks and use their touchdowns in the month of September to support St. Jude Children's Research Hospital down there in Memphis, Tennessee. This program will probably end up doing $1 million by next year. And that's taken that learning experience to the next level. The high school level where there's a lot more high school football players than there are college football players, but using the college football players and the few NFL players as role models, we're able to get more guys engaged younger. And, the high school football in 65% of America really dominates the locker. Dominates the hallways in high schools. And you want those kids to be leading the student body in the right direction, you know, and leading by example and taking a lot of pride in this. And, you know, one of the funny conversations I had with Commissioner Delaney when we were trying to grow uplifting athletes out of the gate, he said, you know, Scott, everything you're saying makes sense. I think it sounds really good. But, you know, when you're in college, you really only have time for three things. It's school, it's sport, and it's social. He said, I don't think people have time for a fourth thing. I said, you know, with all due respect, the guys are choosing to use their social time in this way. Right. And what coach wouldn't rather have their kids getting together on a Friday night brainstorming how they can get more people to attend their summer lifting event versus going to the bar and trying to figure out how they can.
Absolutely.
Whatever, you know, and it's funny, in our second or third year, we had about eight teams and every team won their conference, including there were co-Big Ten champions that year. So I've always liked to think that the teams that are involved in uplifting athletes do have somewhat of a competitive advantage. They certainly have a recruiting advantage, you know, whenever you know how competitive the recruiting game has gotten and there's a certain type of kid that you want your program.
Absolutely.
And having something like uplifting athletes that you're offering sometimes can be a difference in getting that kid.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you look at pretty much, you know, every World Series champion, every NFL champion, there's usually some sort of catalyst that kind of helped them get together. And I mean, if it's purely just, you know, wins and losses, I mean, there's enough there to rally a team around a cause for sure. But more importantly is the making the impact in the world and leaving, you know, kind of leaving your footprint in the way that you can. And, you know, using organizations like this and tools like Pledge It, people can do that in their own way. And I think that's incredible. We end the show with some resources. What's the best piece of business coaching advice you ever received?
Oh, man, you know, the one thing that Joe said that's always stuck with me is if you take care of the little things, the big things take care of themselves. And I usually joke when I'm public speaking, I said that defined his offense for 50 years. You know, it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust. But the reality is if every man does his job and puts, you know, you put a hat on a hat and that 3 yards in a cloud of dust every now and then pops for a 60-yard touchdown. You know, the big plays come from taking care of the little things. And that's really been true in my experience, both with uplifting athletes and with Pledge It. You know, everybody talks about wanting something to go viral, right? You know, the Ice Bucket Challenge is a great example of that. And there's not really a formula for how to make something go viral, but if you're ready when the opportunity comes, and that was the case with Jack Hoffman's touchdown at Nebraska. You know, we were part of the Mark Herzlich Beat Cancer movement at Boston College. And, you know, Devin called me because of his experience with uplifting athletes, and that's what launched Pledge It. And, you know, I think that's really the best advice. And that translates to me, not just in business, but in life and in parenting and in relationships. I mean, just take care of the little things. You can overwhelm yourself worrying about the big things, but take care of the little things and the big things will take care of themselves.
I couldn't agree more. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Yeah, the book, you know, that I like to recommend is Delivering Happiness. It's not a sport-based book, but it's about culture, developing a culture within your program, within your organization. Tony Hsieh was the CEO of Zappos, and he has a lot of really funny anecdotes about, you know, when his back was against the wall. But the thing about it that I like the most, and I try to apply in a lot of different situations, is, and even candidly in my faith and the idea of free will. And after he takes you through an intense 6-week training program, he gives you a leave bonus. He offers you $5,000 to quit the company. So that way you are choosing to leave the money and pursue the job because you value it greater than the money that he's offering you to quit. And, you know, I think when you look at everything that Penn State's been through, and we don't need to get into the depth of that, but the NCAA gave every player the option to transfer for free, which doesn't exist other than the postgraduate, you know, option. And the players that chose to stay said, I care more about being at Penn State than I care about more playing time, than I care about winning a national championship, than I care about going to a bowl game.
Yeah.
So the fact that those guys stayed meant that was the deepest commitment that they could make when they had a free out and on with free will, they chose to stay. And I think that, you know, that's kind of the heart of Penn State that has has really swelled over the last 5 years. And I really think it's remarkable that they are where they are as a program. And I think it comes back to the idea that Penn State's always recruited that type of player that values the name on the front more than the name on the back.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us the websites that we can go to find out more about Uplifting Athletes. And
yeah, definitely check out upliftingathletes.org. We have a lot of really cool initiatives that you can get involved with in different ways there. And then pledgeit.org, spelled out pledgeit.org. And you can go there and create your own movement. You can click the button, start a campaign, and raise money based on any type of performance. We have a lot of weightlifting. We have a lot of people that do it per pound, per rep, per mile, per, you know, we've really seen it all, per pound lost, per pound gain. Depends on what you want to motivate yourself to do more of, and you know, what you want to rally people around. So that can be done for any cause. It can be done for scholarships, for uniforms, for, like I said, hurricane relief or the Eastern Congo Initiative. It's only limited by your imagination.
Well, like I said earlier, man, I'm so incredibly impressed with people that take an idea and see it all the way through and obviously make an impact like you have in so many ways. And I think what's great about you is that you've not only done that for yourself and some people that you're close with, but you've now given that opportunity for other coaches to do something very similar, you know. And I think that's, you know, anytime that we have an idea, a lot of people that watch this know that I have, you know, a 501c3 called Adoption Game Plan, where, you know, it's helping coaching families adopt, you know, I think we all have something in us, a deep-seated passion and desire to help somebody, something. And, you know, being able to have tools like this to be able to do that, I think are fantastic, man. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.